This is Pure Decking for April the 26th, 1986. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps. Tonight we've got Syntax, Suave, and Sard. So what's everybody drinking tonight?
Beer.
Beer. What kind of beer?
I'm actually drinking really shitty Mexican beer.
Shitty Mexican beer. I'm currently drinking Red Bull and vodka.
I am actually sitting down with a nice glass of port.
Very nice. Sard, what do you got?
Really?
I'm drinking Tears of the Innocent.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm not drinking anything.
How much does that cost on eBay?
it's very expensive. It's high classy, you know, very high priced stuff.
Geez, looking at everybody else's handles tonight, I feel like I should, you know, and I need a prefix that starts with an S on mine. Shit.
Yeah, but Smorps doesn't.
It doesn't work. I know.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I've got no station news or feedback tonight. So just gonna go straight into current events. This first one up is from Extreme Tech, but it was actually covered on Pharonix and a few other sites as well. Valve has confirmed that Linux ports of both Steam and the Source Engine are in active development and should be released later this year. There are native solutions that run. These are native solutions that run directly on Linux without any kind of Wine emulation. Left 4 Dead 2 will be the first source-based title on Linux, but once the engine has been successfully ported over, other AAA games will surely follow. Speaking to Michael Librero of Pharonix, Gabe Newell expressed stunning negativity for Windows 8 and the future of Microsoft. Well, gee, anybody else who's played with the Windows 8 betas? On the flip side, after speaking positively about Linux for hours, Librero clips that Newell could be the director of the Linux Foundation. While Newell doesn't say it outright, his comments to Librero and the timing of the Steam and Source for Linux could hint that Valve isn't confident about the future of gaming on Windows. Linux ports have been in the works for years, and yet now, just as a couple of months after the release of Windows 8 Consumer Preview, a working version of Left 4 Dead 2 for Linux appears. And they do have screenshots, by the way, of it running on Ubuntu. Another possibility is that Linux will power Valve's open hardware platform, Steambox Video Game Console, which it recently confirmed is in development. Valve isn't a hardware operating system designer, so starting with a known quantity such as Linux makes a lot of sense. I think that's what's really going on, is their console's going to run Linux, so they're kind of hammering it out on PCs first.
Which console do you think?
Valve. Valve is making a Steambox.
Really?
Yeah.
That is awesome. Someone play Hallelujah.
That is fucking cool.
What I would like to see with that is, okay, all these games I bought on Steam, once they get Linux ports, I'd like to be able to just install Steam on Linux and pull any games that I've already bought in on Linux, which would be nice.
Amen to that.
The other thing,
they'll probably do that.
Well, I would hope so. The other big thing is any games I bought on Steam for PC, if they have a port for their console, I should be able to just install on the console without having to buy it again. Because right now, if you go buy a Xbox game, Xbox 360, you have to buy the PC version again if you want it on your PC.
The problem with that is it's not the game maker's decision.
True.
It's the console maker's decision. So, you know, because they need to get their cut. You know, like if you bought something on Steam and you want to get that working on your PlayStation 3, let's say, well, Sony's got to get a cut of that. And they can't just give it to you.
Well, if Steam's making their own console.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they've already got their cut.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying is with Steam's console, if I can hit the library of games I've already bought on PC and play them on the console, hells yeah, I'll buy one.
Yeah, shit, so would I.
I'll buy three.
just as long as Minecraft doesn't go on it.
Does not go on it?
Does yeah, not, well, yeah.
I think that would be a major selling point for most everybody else on this call. Although, I tell you, I haven't really played Minecraft in like 3 weeks.
Well, yeah, but... Okay, this is what someone needs to make. Someone needs to make a Minecraft box.
They've already done that. It's called your laptop. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's supposed to be funny. It's a box. Like a box. Never mind. Oh, that was a bucket of fail.
Nice try, though.
I need to make a rocket snail sound effect. I'm not sure what that would sound like, though. I mean, the rocket engine part is obvious, but what kind of sound does a snail make? I mean, I'm not sure it really makes any sound, so... maybe kind of a slimy moving across. Of course, people think that'll be a porn set. You know what? Let's just go on to the next story here. This is from Ars Technica. VMware has confirmed a leak of source code from ESX Hypervisor. The code was posted on Pastebin on April 8th by a hacker calling himself Hardcore Charlie. There's a name.
That is a name.
VMware confirmed the theft yesterday and said there's a possibility that more files may be posted in the future. The good news is that the code dates from 2003 to 2004. While VMware ESX is still heavily used, VMware is shifting customers to a newer hypervisor called ESXi, which has a smaller attack surface and is designed to be more secure. The fact that the source code may be publicly available or publicly shared does not necessarily mean that there is any increased risk to VMware customers, the company said. VMware proactively shares its source code and interfaces with other industry participants to enable a broad virtualization ecosystem today. We take customer security seriously and have engaged in internal and external resources, including VMware Security Response Center, to thoroughly investigate, and we'll continue to provide updates to the VMware community when additional information is available. Yeah, sure you will. Kapersky Lag, Threat Plus Blog, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, they call it, here's the thing. Kapersky's Lag called it the IT equivalent of the Deepwater Horizon oil spill disaster. Yeah, because that's an equivalent.
Lies.
Yeah, pretty much. The cool part here is VMware source code was reportedly stolen from the Chinese military contractor, CEIEC.
I wonder if the Chinese actually, like, pronounce that.
Sick. I mean, it sounds like you've just been kicked in the balls.
So, exactly.
I don't know. Anyways,
actually, isn't that the sound when you stab someone when you were a little kid? It's all sick.
No, I think that's when you're telling your dog to kill somebody. It's like sick balls. I mean, you know.
Oh yeah. Okay.
But anyways, they've got some VMware source code out there. I looked. It's not the full source code. It's not like the Symantec release where you could actually pull the thing into Visual Studio and build it if you wanted to. It's
bummer.
Yeah, he's only posted bits and pieces. He's got screenshots and he's got a couple of files he's posted, like C files. But I was kind of hoping he'd release the whole thing.
You know, I could post pictures of fucking C files. No one will know what they fucking are. I'd be like, look, it's a C file.
Well, VMware's saying, no, that looks like our code, so...
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's... when the company goes, oh, fuck.
Yeah, pretty much. Sucks. But, you know, again, the thing is they're saying it's the code from 2003, 2004. Or was it 02 to 03? Let me scroll back up here. Okay, 3 or 4. But, yeah, so it's 10-year-old code. I'm not sure how many people are still using ESX2. But I'm sure they're out there. So
that's what I'm thinking. I mean, you'll see some more exploits pop up for it, I bet you.
You but might.
They are right. I mean, they don't sell... You can't buy ESX anymore. The only thing they sell is ESXi. So it's ESX is just VMware, vCenter, and all those tools and stuff that run on top of Windows, where ESXi is essentially a custom Linux distro.
They stripped down a version of Red Hat.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much work you've done on ESXi, but I've had quite a bit of fun with it. And yes, it is Red Hat. It's Red Hat 5, if you want to be specific. But
Red Hat 5?
Enterprise 5.
Oh, okay. Okay.
No, not Red Hat 5.
Yeah, I'm like, the fuck, really? they're running 10-year-old software on, what, 20-year-old operating system?
No, their kernels weren't actually that far out of date. You know, you'd expect them to be, you know, they were only about, say, 10 revisions behind. You know, it wasn't terribly far out of date last time I screwed around with one of those things. So,
Yeah. And supposedly, I read in another article that this hack, this guy claimed to get over a terabyte worth of data.
He's got a bunch of stuff posted up. He's
yeah.
What he's really doing is he's going after any military operations he can. He's gone after the U.S. military. He's gone after China.
Man, he's pretty extreme.
Yeah. He's got a bunch of pastebin posts up. Like I said, I tried to find the source code because I want to look at it. You know, same thing with the Symantec code. I'd like to see it. But, yeah. You know, I don't know if I'm supposed to own up to that or not, but I've actually got the Symantec code or a copy of it anyways on a flash drive somewhere. I don't know where it's ended up, to be honest, but I have it somewhere. So,
and at this point in the show, I'd like to say hi to all the Alphabet boys who are listening.
Oh, fuck. Do you know how many people have that code at this point? I pulled it down off a freaking BitTorrent. I'm not sure if it's even piracy. It's not their finished product. I mean, yeah, it's their intellectual property, but... Oh, speaking of piracy, did anybody else see that YouTube video of the guy trying to say Adblock software was piracy?
Wait, what?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, that's funny as hell.
That. But, you know, like that's like changing... Okay, that's like saying that changing the channel while watching a TV show and it goes to commercial is piracy.
Oh, fuck. That's like saying not looking at the billboards as you're driving down the highway is piracy. I mean, come on. I mean... Huh. I'm going to clip that guy up. That's going to be our previously on IHN, I think. I need to get that video back up and clip it out just because it's... it's hilarious.
Oh, is IHN back?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah,
thanks, everyone, for telling me.
Well,
we said that we were just doing a short hiatus.
Well, yeah, and last time, you know, I heard, it's just a short hiatus. It's like a month.
It started as 2 weeks, and then we added one more week onto it, so it's 3 weeks.
Well, we did a two-week hiatus, and Suave, they managed to do a show without us for 152, I believe. Okay. And it was kind of a half IHN, half Nameless Review show, which was great, because RU kept going back to BSV, and BSV just kept saying, I'm digging a hole. So, and then they did IHN... no, that was 151. 152 was... Yeah, we've been back for this. This will be a month we've been back this weekend. Yeah. I missed last week, but apparently Analog handled that, and I only listened to a bit of it, so I don't know how well that went.
But, now, see, what... Oh, shit, what they should have done for 151 is just everyone gone out and bought a half pint of Captain Morgan 151.
Yeah, but you'd need more than that to affect mostly, especially are you?
Well, you know... You know what I'm saying.
I've been sitting here drinking vodka the whole time. I don't know what you're talking about, man. I'm good. So 151, I mean, it's good stuff, but shit. You need half the damn bottle to get the effect you want. So let's move right along.
That's fine. Okay, continuing on.
Maybe if I lost more weight. God. I'm trying to get ready for the zombie run. It's like, yeah, I lose some weight. Maybe the vodka will work then. Anyway. Okay, this one's from Torrent Freak, and this is just scary. Hollywood-backed anti-piracy outfit Brin is going all out to make the Pirate Bay inaccessible to the Dutch public. After successfully blocking the Pirate Bay through court and then censoring proxy sites that link to it, they are now demanding that the Pirate Party should be banned from discussing how easily the internet censorship can be circumvented. The political party is baffled by the proposed gag order and has asked the court to lift all censorship efforts. The legal battle over internet censorship is reaching new heights in the Netherlands as local anti-piracy group Breen is now asking the court to gag the Pirate Party. The lawsuit is the next move in Breen's attempt to deny Dutch citizens access to the Pirate Bay. In January, a Dutch court ruled that Ziggo, the largest ISP in the country, and competitor XS4All, must block all access to the Pirate Bay. As a result, hundreds of individuals set up proxy sites that allowing subscribers to route around the blockade, effectively rendering the order useless. In a countering move, Brin obtained an injunction from the court to shut these proxies down, including one operated by the Pirate Party. However, the pirates are determined to put a fight and have taken Brin to court to get the order overthrown. The case in which the Pirate Party asked the court to lift all censorship restrictions was heard by the court yesterday. Brin, however, did exactly the opposite by submitting a rather broad set of new demands, essentially asking the court to gag a political party. In short, Brin's demands are as follows. The Pirate Party should be banned from operating a reverse proxy for the Pirate Bay. The Pirate Party should be banned from operating a generic proxy service. The Pirate Party should be banned from linking to third-party proxies. The Pirate Party should be banned from listing new IP addresses and domains the Pirate Bay registers. The Pirate Party should be banned from encouraging people to circumvent the Pirate Bay blockade. The Pirate Party... Oh. If the Pirate Party violates the above terms, Breen asks for a penalty of 10,000 euros per day, up to a maximum of 250,000 euros. Needless to say, the demands of the anti-piracy group are unprecedented for a copyright-related case. It is essentially a gag order to enforce a previously obtained court verdict. If the court sides with Brin, it will have rather far-reaching consequences for people's freedom of speech. Yeah, Brin is essentially telling the Dutch courts, you have to censor a political party to enforce what we want.
I mean, didn't McCarthy do that back in the? In the...
This is essentially what? No, shut up! This is a group with a lot of money going to the courts and saying, shut them up.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, have you seen some of the pirate partiers? I wouldn't mind gagging a few of them.
Are we talking about a ball gag, or are we talking about
generally.
But
that's just how I roll. So.
Well, we know that, and we So.
Yeah, and all those listeners that have listened to the Between the Sheets and have gone and listened to old IHN and stuff like that, and they're like, oh fuck, he wasn't joking.
Nobody accused you of joking.
That's true.
We know better. But yeah, no, this just boggles my mind, because if this works in a Dutch court, that means it's going to effectively work in most European courts, right? So yeah. How long before they start saying, well, all these EU courts are doing it, you know, and the RIAA and MPAA come over here and start doing shit like this?
Yeah, someone's going to try, of course. I don't know. There's going to be someone who's going to freak out and...
Won't somebody please think of the children porn?
wait, what?
That's, you know, that's their trump card.
Well, you know, that's what they always
might
fall
come
back
through
on.
And try, and then they'll be like, you have to shut down Google because they have links to kiddie porn. And, you know, it's just going to go downhill from there.
Well, I tell you, this story...
You know what? That's... Fuck it. That's our new stance. We just need to shut down Google because they have links to kiddie porn.
Yeah, well, they probably do. Well, between this story, the CISPA stuff, and a conversation I had with Lore earlier in the week, the digital dojo I have for this week starts to make a lot of sense. So,
Now, how many sites does Google archive? Because I know they archive a shit ton.
They archive anything they can find a link to that doesn't have a robots.txt telling them not to.
Then they have archived kiddie porn.
I'm sure they have. Well, what about shit like archive.org, where they've got backups of most sites going back, you know, a decade now?
And well, though, to be fair, most of the stuff that they archive is actually, they don't archive images, it's just text.
Yeah,
it's just,
well, fair
well
enough.
not always, but a lot of the time.
Well, they still link to it, and we've had the news story where they were trying to argue that linking to material is the same as hosting it.
Oh, absolutely.
So, all right, moving on. This is a story that RU sent me. It's from New South Wales. It's abc.net.au, so it's Australian. But, yeah, this one's hilarious. An extraordinary legal battle is shaping up in the federal court, with a multinational software company suing the New South Wales police for wide-scale copyright piracy. The UK software company Micro Focus is demanding at least $10 million in damages from the New South Wales police. It is claimed the NSW police have been using pirated copies of their computer software for more than a decade to run their COPS, computerized operational police system, for the largest criminal intelligence database in the country. Again, they're talking about Australia there, so don't get confused. It was a routine request from the NSW ombudsman back in August 2010 that first set off the alarm bells for Bruce Craig, the Australian managing director of Micro Focus. Our team was out at the ombudsman's office. I'm probably saying that wrong. And in a conversation, they said that they were accessing the COPS database using our software, he told 7.30. And we said, what software? You don't own our software? The software in question is called ViewNow. It is a mainframe computer program NSW Police began using in 1998 to access the COPS database, which holds the highly confidential details of just about every citizen in the state, with the exception of RU, because we know he was taking steps to avoid that thing. Cybercrime investigator Michael Speck, there's a name, said that the COPS database I'm just going to make fun of people's names. I don't care anymore. The COPS database operates like the nervous system of the NSW police and holds critical intelligence on everything from criminal histories to victims of crime. Microfocus says that the ombudsman query, after the ombudsman's query, they started investigating and were astounded to discover that police had been duplicating their software, then sharing the stolen booty with other law enforcement agencies. So in other words, they were saying, hey, yeah, here's what we used to get in the database. Here's a flash drive. You know, somebody was asking for help. This isn't software piracy. This is people not knowing, you know, not understanding licensing, which says something when the cops don't understand the freaking licensing. And not just the ombudsman's office, but two other state untouchables, the Department of Corrective Services and the Police Integrity Commission. When someone pirates your software, you think, who am I going to call? The police, Mr. Craig said? In this case, they are the pirates. Mr. Craig awesome. Says that Microfocus's contact with the police was very specific. He says the police were allowed to use 6,500 ViewNow licenses, and if they wanted any more, they would have to pay for them. The licenses were for police only, yet police were handing out our software like confetti, he said. And it goes on and on about how
you
the police...
You don't hand out confetti, you hand out candy to little kids.
It's Australia. Maybe their customs are different. I understand they box kangaroos to determine their governmental leaders. So,
oh, okay. Well,
but, yeah.
That works. I've never once had a whole bag full of confetti and gone, here, would you like some? And just started handing it out.
But I'm going to stop reading the story.
The entire story.
Yeah, the rest of the story goes on about how apparently the police are going to countersue and they're going to go back and forth on this licensing thing. And eventually, I think they're just going to waste a bunch of government money on this lawsuit and end up probably settling anyways. The lawyers.
But the cops, of course. It's like, oh, yeah. Okay, we lost. Arrest me.
Well, that is true. I mean, who do you call when the cops are the ones that are doing the crime here in mass like that?
Yeah.
It sounds to me like they didn't have any kind of protection on their software to prevent, you know, just easily copying the installer around, which, don't get me wrong, I like to see that in software.
Most of us like to see that in software.
And the cops are just like, oh, you need access? Here you go.
You know, like you said, it's people not understanding what licensing is, but I like to use this story just to get a wall because, you know, to have that whole argument that, see, even the cops don't give a fuck about licensing. So
it's gotten to the point that nobody cares anymore.
How many times have, you know, you been pulled over and the cop's like, you were speeding. You're like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize.
Well, you were to keep up with me, sir.
Yeah. Well, no. And it's like, well, I didn't know what the speed limit was. And they go, well, negligence of the law is no excuse.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
I'm
just saying they don't appreciate it when you say, well, how did you clock me? Well, I paced you. That means you were speeding too, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You usually get frisked for that one. But
you really don't want to say that.
I did get out of a ticket because when the cop pulled me over, he had a headlight out. And I was all, dude, you got to give yourself a ticket for having a headlight out. He's like, wait, what? I'm like, look, you got a fucking headlight out. Don't be a dick. And he let me go.
Your eyes look a little glazed, officer. You've been eating donuts? Ways to get nightsticked. Anyways.
Yeah, I used to have a bumper sticker on my little truck that said, bad cop, no donut. I got out of one ticket for it. I got a whole bunch more for it.
I was going to say, you got pulled over a lot. That's why everybody donates to the Fraternal Order of Police once, is to get the sticker.
Yeah, fuck, you
know,
that.
You know, the don't pull me over sticker. Anyways. All right, next story. What were you going to say, Swaff?
I was just going to say, wasn't there a big, massive amount of issues over that in the big city somewhere in the States where they all got called out on using that sticker as preferential treatment and a bunch of people got in trouble?
I don't remember. I'm sure there are.
I remember there was a huge controversy over that somewhere down the States. I can't remember where.
You know what's really funny? When those people call you, because they do, you know, they telemarket. When they call you and go, oh, yeah, we're with the Fraternal Order of Police, blah, blah, blah. Ask them if they have any actual ties to a police department.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they don't. They're just, I don't know. I think it's fucking scam and fuck them in their cop-loving asses.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Suave, you research a much broader news base than I do, so you're more likely to know about that than I would. But, all right, next story, this one's from ZDNet. Within hours of Google launching its new online storage service, the terms of service have come under heavy fire by the wider community for how it handles users' copyright and intellectual property rights. After Dropbox and Microsoft SkyDrive, the two most popular online storage services on the web, Google was late to the party by a number of years. I was going to say, I've been using Dropbox for like 2 years. While Google needed no advertising to drum up support, what may hold back uptake is that, as per the company's terms and conditions, the rights to the files you upload to Google Drive will be passed on to the search giant. In other words, if you read their terms of conditions for Google Drive, you're granting them a license to do whatever the hell they want with your with anything you upload.
Big surprise.
Well, to be fair, I was actually reading up on this, and all of these news articles on this are blowing it way out of proportion. If you actually look at the legalese for all of the other cloud-based file storage systems, they all have very similar wording in their legal agreements. And the reasoning is, like, for example, one of it is they have the right to distribute it in a public network or something like that. Well, that's actually just so you can access it from an internet cafe.
Actually,
and, you know, like, there's a lot of things in there that are actually you have to agree to so you can actually use the product in the way that it's
intended.
That's true.
That's why I picked this specific, because this story's all over the place. That's why I picked this specific article. Is they actually, I don't have it in the show notes. They actually, if you go click on the ZD link, the ZDNet link, they have the relevant sections of all three user terms cut out in the article. And essentially, SkyDrive and Dropbox say you retain ownership of your files. It's yours. Whereas Google says, where is it? When you upload or otherwise submit content to our services, you give Google and those we work with a worldwide license to use, host, store, reproduce, modify, create derivative works. That's the scary one. Such as those resulting from translations, adaptations, and other changes that we make so that your content better works with our services.
Okay.
Like, for example, saying change, well, that could actually just be, you know, changing the format so it works.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, converting it over, like, let's say you have a Word document and they want to make it so it'll open with Google Docs. You know, that would also fall under that wording.
Well, let me finish the rest of the sentence here. Communicate, publish, publicly perform, and publicly display and distribute such content. The rights that you grant this license are for the limited purposes of operating, promoting, and improving our services and developing new ones. This license continues even if you stop using our services. That's the line that's not in any of the others.
All right, but, you know, for example, the publicly perform one, that's what I was talking about when using it at internet cafes. And, you know, for after you're done using their services, well, your data's still up there.
True.
So, unless you delete it.
No, right. this is probably a case of some lawyer at Google just being very, very protective, trying to make sure there's not going to ever be a lawsuit of any kind. I mean, let's be real. Google's not going to go through and you know, go nuts with everybody's files in Google Drive unless they get a subpoena or something. But
oh, dude, right. But they could. That's why this doesn't surprise me at all. You're putting your data on their servers. It's a cloud drive. You're no longer retaining that information. That's why I don't use Dropbox. I don't use any of that shit purely for this reason. I have my own servers at home.
I use Dropbox, but I don't put anything important on it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could do that, but
I use it for, you know, if I find a cool background image or something like that at work and I want to have that at home, I'll throw that onto Dropbox because I don't give a shit about that. But, you know, I wouldn't be putting, my entire website on there or something like that, you know.
If they actually run their websites out of the public folder in Dropbox, which I think is hilarious.
Oh, Jesus.
All right.
Yeah. But God.
What if they start crawling that drive and see that? Oh well, you copied this image, but you don't own the copyrights for that image. Now they're gonna sue you, or you know whatever proportion. But
I'm protected from that sort of crap here in Canada, so I don't have to worry as much about that.
Well, okay. Yeah. Here's one for you though. Back to what the story's actually about. Let's say you uploaded your photo album from your phone or from your camera onto the Google Drive just so you'd have a place to put it so you can get it home. And then, you know, a week later, you see an ad, you know, like a Chrome ad, and they've got your photos. They're using as stock photos. They've got the legal right to do that.
Yeah, exactly, dude. That's why it doesn't surprise me. And you know what? If they want to use it, then let them. I don't care. I'm still keeping my private servers private.
This is why, like we've said before, what happens in a fucking cloud? Rain, lightning, nastiness, right? Okay, don't fucking keep shit in a cloud because it's fucking bad. Clouds are not happy, puffy little, you know, where fucking the Care Bears live. No. No, it is bad shit that kills things and destroys and wrecks things. Okay, let's keep our stuff off of these clouds.
Go ahead,
good of humanity.
Well, all I was going to say is all these news articles that are freaking out over this Google service, I don't really get it because all of these cloud services do the exact same thing. And they're this is a special circumstance, evil Google. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if these articles are sponsored by Dropbox or something like that.
You know, that shit happens. So.
Oh, yeah.
It does.
But really, it's Sard said, I don't really recommend using any of these services because, you don't have control over your data.
That's true. And hell, Google's already got all my email, which most of that shit's already in there anyways. So.
Yeah. And you know, that's another thing about this whole Google storage. You've already agreed to these terms by using all of their other services. So, you know, anything of theirs that you use, like Blogger or, Gmail or, Picasa or any of this shit, they've already
fucking
got your
YouTube
stuff.
Now?
Yeah.
I've noticed YouTube wanting you to log in for more and more of their videos. Mm-hmm. Like, it used to be just anything that might have, a tit in it. Now it's this thing might have violence in it. It's it wanted me to log in to watch one of the Team Fortress 2 videos. And it was awesome. Wait.
Well, all it takes is, one person to tag it. And then they're like, oh, well, we better cover for our asses, so yeah, you gotta log in now.
Yeah, I seriously think it's because they, you know, the way their agreements are written, if you're logged in, they've got every right to track you. So I think they're more and more focused to just getting you to stay logged in all the time. So,
yeah.
Okay, moving on. This one is from a WordPress This one is from a WordPress blog. Maybe I've had too much vodka. opusmagnus.wordpress.com.
Hold on. Before we start, I have a simple question real quick.
All right.
Before the story, is a blowjob different than actual fucking? Is it not sex?
It is because a form of sex.
Well, yes, but Bill Clinton said that, you know, he made the precedent that a blowjob is not sex. Can I just keep that?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'll agree with that.
All right. Thank you.
That depends on the people involved as to whether or not they want to. You know what? Never mind. That has nothing to do with anything.
It's not sex if babies cannot result.
Exactly. Thank you.
Wow.
That's all I'm going to say about that.
That means anal is not sex.
That's right.
Okay, just making sure.
I'm going to stick to what I said.
Just making sure.
Anal is sodomy. Technically, a blowjob is sodomy. Sex with a condom?
Apparently not, according to Swole.
That's my theory.
Okay, sorry about that. Continue on, Morb. Sorry for hijacking your show.
Okay, back to this WordPress post. It looks like the Russian government has taken drastic action to eliminate a big name in liberated email services. Tormail.net has had its domain name pulled by its Russian registrar, and they say the chances are slim of getting the domain name back. They aren't gone, but everybody with a tormail.net email address has just been moved to a tormail.org via a different registrar. You can get official word from Tormail's hidden service, which is untouched by Russia's attack, because that's, you know, a .onion address. Okay, this was posted on the 20th. Early this morning, April 20th, our domain name registrar, nick.ru, suspended the domain name tormail.net. The reason they gave is because they require us to submit ID documents to them, apostized and certified by the Russian embassy. We are unable to do this to protect our own identity. And this request is very unusual and suspicious. They have further refused to unlock the domain and allow us to transfer it to a different registrar. We have filed a complaint with ICANN. As per the domain transfer rules, they are not allowed to do this. As it is the weekend, we probably won't get a response until next week, and to transfer the domain normally takes about a week to be completed. For this reason, the earliest we can hope for is to have the domain back within 2 weeks. It is possible that the domain is gone for good, and it may not be possible to get it back, because they've got a registrar saying, nope, you can't have it. Up until 2 months ago, the domain was registered with a USA company, Moncur Domains, and they were great, and we had no problems with them. But the recent domain seizures, we decided to move the domain offshore. And it appears we made a big mistake. Well, yeah, you went with a Russian registrar. What were the fuck were you thinking? The Russian.
It's like, hey, okay, wait, are we going to go with a North Korean registrar or Russian?
Well, I just love this line out of the posting here. It appears that this was a big mistake. The Russian providers are much worse. You think? The chances of getting the domain back do not look good, and even if we get it back, it'll take a long time. For that reason, we have registered a new domain, tormail.org, and we'll use that one to continue the service. If we do get the tormail.net domain back, we will change back to using that one. So what happened here was they offshored their domain because of all the U.S. domain name seizures. Fair enough. But instead of going with, say, a Swiss registrar or, I don't know, a Nigerian registrar, or
is there a lot of Nigerian registrars?
I don't know. I just think that they would have been better than a freaking Russian registrar.
That is true.
Russia, North Korea, and China. Registrars you probably don't want to use. Iranian. You could have gone for an Iranian registrar.
Yeah. A Lebanese registrar. That's the way to go.
No, in all seriousness, you wanted to go with like a Swiss registrar, or you wanted to
or
go
Latvia.
With Latvia, Island of Man. That would have been a good one.
Doesn't Finland or Denmark have no like cybercrimes laws?
I think it's Finland, and
you go.
They've got a lot of domains registered through them, though. Who was it? Pirate Bay moved to? They changed their domain from .org to something.
To dot awesome?
No, it's not dot. Shit, I'm gonna have to Google this real quick. Somebody else talk while I'm Googling.
Okay, yep. So there was this one time.
SE.piratebay.se. So.
Oh, why did you cut off my story?
Go ahead. With the story.
Morph was like, "Oh God, no, not one of syntax and
stories." Yeah, it was going to involve nakedness and awkwardness.
Well, if it's syntax being naked, I'd rather avoid it. Now, if it's, you know, a female being naked, I'm not going to object. But
it's usually me and several other females.
Well, as long as, you know, we've getting appropriate camera angles, as in nobody wants to see you.
Oh. But I'm fucking dead sexy.
You know, the timing on that may have been wrong. I wasn't actually meaning to insult you, but, you know, anyways. Okay.
Okay, rocket snailing on.
Yeah. Rocket snail. Anyways, this one's from Russia Today, RT.com. And it's about time we talked about CISPA, because I've been ignoring it, to be honest. This is the Cyber Intelligence Security Protection Act. In spite of the protests from the Obama administration that CISPA encroaches on civil liberties of Americans, the House of Representatives is marching ahead with the legislation. It met on Thursday to discuss the controversial act ahead of Friday's decision. In other words, tomorrow they're voting on the damned thing.
Why do they have to put protection in everything?
I don't know anymore.
That's annoying.
The really frustrating... Let me finish the story, then we'll talk about it. In addition, the House Rules Committee dismissed a list of changes to the legislation suggested by the Center for Democracy and Technology, the CDT. The amendments would have potentially limited private companies from sharing cyber threat data with U.S. government bodies. By disregarding the amendments, the House leadership has squandered an opportunity to achieve balanced cybersecurity legislation, the CDT said in an amendment. What is CISPA? CISPA, an abbreviation for the Cyber Intelligence Security and Protection Act, was introduced in the House of Representatives on November 30th, 2011, by Mike Rogers, a Republican, as well as 111 co-sponsors. In other words, somebody's been greasing some palms. Since then, Since then, a number of amendments have been introduced. The House is expected to vote on the bill Friday, and its author has said that the latest changes brought the number of supporting congressmen well past the threshold of 218 necessary for the adoption of the legislation. It is therefore very likely that the bill will be passed by the House. However, it is not all that certain whether the bill would be made into law, especially with the White House's latest statement that President Obama would be advised to veto the legislation. Yeah, because he actually... You know, I don't much care for Obama. I don't know how much of that comes out in the show, but I really don't much care for Obama. But he doesn't veto shit very often, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he's saying he was going to, but then I saw another story saying, well, he was kind of waffling on that, so we'll see. Okay, so what does CISPA entail for internet users? The act says it is meant to create procedures for allowing elements of the intelligence community to share cyber threat intelligence with private sector entities and to encourage the sharing of such intelligence. It also states that as a cybersecurity provider or a self-protected entity may share cyber threat information with any other entity designed or designated by such protected entity, including the federal government. The U.S. Representative presidential candidate Ron Paul called the bill Big Brother writ large. The American ACLU has said that has also issued a statement criticizing CISPA. The Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act would create a cybersecurity exception to all privacy laws and allow companies to share the private and personal data they hold on American consumers with the government for cybersecurity purposes, the statement reads. The ACLU, along with other NGOs, including the Constitution Protection and the Center for Democracy and Technology, took part in a so-called Stop Cyber Spying Week, during which they sought to raise awareness of CISPA through a Twitter campaign, because, you know, those are so fucking effective. Essentially, CISPA is the next SOPA or PIPA. It doesn't work...
Okay, well, that, and this is what we need to do. This is how we kill this. We, as Galaxy 15, need to become Galaxy 15 security.
Well, that would actually work, given my day job.
Yeah, right? And then we just start flooding them with, if this does pass, flooding them with requests for information.
Well, okay.
On them.
What's from what I understand, having not read the bill, because good God, have you ever tried to read legislation? I mean, it's like written in code or some shit. From what I understand, the goal of this one is to get ISPs and other companies to essentially share everything they've tracked on their users with the government, because then they get immunity for, you know, tracking their users by sharing it with the government.
Perfect.
So the goal here is not for the government to do the spying, but to have all these have your ISP and all these other companies do the spying and then just report back to the government.
So then, yeah, all we have to do is find out who all these congressmen's ISPs are. And let the fun commence.
Yeah. Yeah.
These guys don't think this shit through, do they?
No, they don't.
Okay. So, because, you know, while they're sitting there, they're like, oh, I'm using Tor to surf the kiddie porn. We could still probably break that.
Okay. Go, no, we have a late-breaking incoming analog. I need an alarm sound for the soundboard. We've talked about this before. I really need like a red alert or something for the soundboard. Analog, you there?
Yes.
Cool. You're in time for the last story, and I just looked at the time, so the show's going to run long. So, yeah. Anyways, let me get you some show notes here.
Oh, Jesus. We still have Digital Dojo and shit.
Oh, yeah. We're 45 minutes in. We haven't even hit the last story or Digital Dojo, and it's going to be a long Digital Dojo. Well, maybe not long, but there's a lot in it. So
awesome. Okay, well, since Analog's here, I have to go take care of something.
All right, man. We'll catch you later.
It means he's still in the closet, you know, and whack it off one.
Maybe. I won't be long.
That's what
leads even more credence to what I've already said.
Oh shit!
Sorry.
Analog, you've got you're doing the Darth Vader thing with your microphone, dude.
And it's corrected now.
Cool. All right, last story I've got for tonight. This is from my Bilbo. Here you will, and you'll want, in all seriousness, you want to go to the show notes and click this link. It's ibilbo.org/apollo/links.html. Here's the slug line from the opening of the page. Here you will find a collection of all the ACG, AGS, LVDC, and Gemini spacecraft computer documentation and software that I've managed to find whilst working on virtual AGC. Every document on this page is archived here at the virtual AGC, regardless of whether it originated here or not. In the early days, I used to include only material which I uncovered with my own efforts, but there have increasingly been contributors by readers, including some of the original AGC developers, and there's material here that has been duplicated from other Apollo-centric websites for your convenience. See the FAQ page for a list of the fine Apollo and Gemini websites I rated. Now, there is some value added in this process, since I add searchable text to those PDFs, which are image-only, as well as adding metadata and bookmark panes where they don't exist. My intention is to eventually provide a one-stop shopping for all your Apollo and Gemini computer system documentation needs. What this guy has done is he has put together a page on iBilbo which has a lot of the old space program computer source code, handbooks, and memos. And it might not be of much use in modern systems, but this is fucking cool. This is like the source code to the computers they use to do the Apollo missions. You know, the moon landings?
That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're not going to pull that shit down and compile it on your modern OS. But if you want to see what they were operating on to do the space program, this is it.
No, this is all... Oh, I'm back, sorry. No, this is awesome because you get a little model rocket... and a Raspberry Pi. Send that bitch to the moon.
I was thinking Commodore 64 because that'd be about the same processing power.
Exactly. Oh yeah. Dude, seriously, how awesome would that be? It's like I'm sending this shit to the moon.
This is cool though because they've got the manuals and source code to the computers they were using to run the Apollo missions and the Gemini missions.
So does it talk about using the punch cards?
Oh yeah, they've got summaries of what was on the punch cards and references and cheat sheets.
Oh fuck that!
This page is huge, man. Go pull up the link and take a look at it. It is. I'm dead serious right now in the middle of the show. Go pull up that link.
So I got documentation, and this now becomes a game out of it. We can take all this, create our own simulation, make it an entire game where you have to pass. You know, whatever we decide, but you know, like you
start off. Oh yeah, they've got the manuals.
builder.
They've got PDFs of the manuals they gave the astronauts to work the computer systems in the modules.
Holy fuck!
I told
that's
you.
Nuts.
Is that not awesome? That's almost a digital dojo in itself, but I didn't have time to go through it, so...
Comprehensive digital simulation for the verification of Apollo flight software.
I mean, Analog's right. You could totally put this thing in a game and make your own simulator for exactly what they were doing in the Apollo missions, because the math is all there too, right?
Yeah, but how boring would that be? Because you know most of the time they sat there and went...
Well, true. Well, I mean, well, think of the Lunar Lander game you could make.
Yeah,
like, we're remaking Lunar Lander, the real game. Also, too, there's probably enough information here. If you wanted to start your own space program, there's a lot there. Now, I don't know that all the math is there, but...
All the abort guidance systems?
Yeah, just scroll through that list and look at everything that's there, man. Launch, I mean, you could spend...
Digital computers? It's a digital computer.
You could spend weeks going through everything that's on there. So, in all seriousness, I cannot do that link justice on an audio program, especially a radio program. Go click it.
They have pictures to the fucking chips.
Yeah. No, it's all there.
Fucking amazing.
I cannot do it justice. You have to click the link and just read. I mean, if you want to, argue the whole we didn't really go to the moon thing, there's a lot of evidence there to the contrary. So,
hey, Morps.
Yes.
I fucking hate you. This is going to be weeks.
Oh, yeah. No. Why do you think it's a news story, not Digital Dojo? But no, Analog's right. If you want to make a video game based on this stuff, it's all there.
What's really awesome is the actual website layout, because it's like circa 1999 is what it's like. Someone made it, you know, in WordPad.
It's totally this guy just adding stuff as he found it, right?
Yeah.
So
this is amazing and fucking awesome, and God, it fucking gives you pad loads.
Isn't that cool? Here's the creepy part, though. You could recreate all of that with an Arduino and a laptop.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, the shit we use to make games today. You could totally recreate the entire space program from the 50s with.
Oh, fuck, it's all from MIT. There's a bunch of shit here from MIT.
Well, where do you think a lot of the math was done?
True. Space Guidance Analysis Memo Number 29.
You know, if you're a third world country wanting to build a missile system,
yeah,
there you go.
And you can thank James E. Potter for putting this memo together with fucking complex fucking math.
But yeah, no, that's. I mean, you know, you want to know what they were really doing. It's all there. So, that's just kind of badass, but.
Wow. Okay. And you know what? If you just memorize one paragraph of this and just spit it out sometimes when your friends are being a little too smart, because just sit there and go, you know, as the constant K in the equation number 3 increases, the epsilon E sub K expands, and the probability that the tip of the random vector, I don't even know what the fuck that symbol is. lies inside E sub K increases towards 1, the error epsilon corresponding to the probability P is the epsilon E sub K.
In other words, I just won this cocktail party.
Exactly. I seriously want to know what this squiggly ass symbol is.
Well, Google is your friend. That said, while Syntax is reading that, I'm going to go ahead and move on to this.
You've lost.
Okay. Wow. I just looked at the time. If we're sticking to our normal format, we've only got like 7 minutes left, so we're going to run long. So for Digital Dojo tonight, I thought we were talking about being anonymous to your ISP. Now, this is what kicked this off is I had a conversation with Laura earlier this week, and actually a little bit over the weekend as well. He had just changed ISPs and had some questions for me, and that got me thinking along these lines, especially with things like, you know, RIAA and MPAA agreements with all the major ISPs, SOPA, PIPA, CISPA, FERPA, Bubble Yellow, or what was the gum?
Yum.
Bubble Yum and Burple. That was what I was starting to think. Burple. Anybody else remember that drink? Burple? You had the thing that stretched out? No?
Yeah. No. I remember this shit.
Anyway. Acta. Acta was the one I forgot. You know, being able to do this kind of shit matters because obviously, especially after SOPA PIPA, they're immediately coming back and trying to pass CISPA. They're going to pass this shit, right? They're just going to keep trying until they get it passed and they wear us out because, let's be real, the Americans don't have much of an attention span, right? So, it's important to know how to do this kind of stuff. The long and short of it is, your ISP can see pretty much anything you do over the wire. And by that, I mean, anything you send out in clear text, if your ISP wants to watch what you're doing, they can. And anybody who's ever worked for an ISP knows exactly what I'm talking about. In fact, I think, Syntax, you've told a story about working for an ISP and calling somebody because they were having problems with their email. Did I lose my call?
No.
Okay, I just lost Syntax. He's reading Apollo Space Mission stuff.
I remember hearing about that story.
Yeah, he told
me. And like, they weren't actually looking at the contents of the email. They just saw there was a large volume of traffic.
Right. So, anyways, the short of it is, if your ISP can see everything you're doing if they care to look.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to kick off the whole, you know, paranoid reaction here, but the conversation with Laura got interesting. So, the short of it is, encryption and redirecting your routing are the only viable ways to circumvent the fact that your ISP can watch what you're doing. And encryption alone isn't actually enough. Your ISP may not be able to see what you're sending, but they know who you're talking to, right? So, you know, it might not matter, but if they can see you were connecting up to some server in Russia that's known for pirated software, where they can take a wild guess that you're pulling down pirated software over encrypted link, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where a lot of this other stuff comes in. So the first thing you want to do is you want to know the risks, right? And again, as I've said, your ISP can see everything that you do. And the question is, do they have a reason to care? Do they want to look? And the most common reason for your ISP to have a reason to care about what you're doing is they've got a warrant or a wiretap and a police officer saying, yeah, we think this guy's doing something bad. We need to see what he's doing. So, yeah. So, the very first thing, have you given somebody a reason to actually care what you do on the internet? Because let's be real. Your average user on the internet who is looking at lolcats and Reddit and the occasional porn site, they don't give a fuck.
You got that order wrong because it's porn site and the occasional Reddit or lolcats.
Okay, Syntax, I'm generalizing, not speaking to you directly.
Oh, okay.
It depends
okay.
on how much porn you're looking at, because I've had my ISP call me before and ask me why I'm downloading so much.
Really?
Porn.
Really? Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, and again, you know, I've actually gotten the show notes here. Do you really care that they know what porn you're looking at? It's like, yep, I'm looking at naked chicks. I am a homosexual male. Wait, I said
the funny part was that it was a woman that called.
I said that wrong though earlier.
That's got to be a really awkward call for her.
Yeah, she's like, oh god, it's that guy.
Well, it's like it's at work. It's like at work when I get file sharing complaints and they're, you know, watching, you know, Backdoor Honeys, XXX, Big Black Women Edition or something. And it's like you call somebody up and it's a chick that answers the phone. It's just like, really? Wow.
Yeah.
I invited her over.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly where I was actually going. I'm like, do you still have her number?
So, you know, that is the joke. Do you care that they know what porn you're looking at? But, you know, the other thing.
In fact, most of the time, if they're like, you were downloading a lot, I'd be like, yeah, it's porn. You want to see it? It's really good.
Well, Syntax, I'd be afraid you'd be like, yeah, you want to see this horse plowing this chick? I'd be like, wait, what?
No. Because, see, I went over this in my show. A horse cannot consent.
I have no response to that.
Moving on.
Hey, it's a valid point.
It is. A toaster cannot consent.
Okay, I just blue screened on that one.
I disagree. A toaster is not a sentient being, therefore it can't consent or not consent.
Wow.
Yeah, still, if you don't have consent to rape the toaster, it's still rape.
No, it's not. It's a tool. It's a tool. It's rape if you use a dildo.
Wait a minute.
It didn't give consent.
Does that mean you have to ask your fleshlight for consent? Because with the iPad attachment, did it actually say yes or no?
It can, yeah.
Okay, let me move on to my next bullet point here, because this is getting weird.
And if anyone wants to donate me an iPad, I will so do a review of the iPad fleshlight attachment. What?
Okay, I just needed a different fail sound there.
Wow.
Okay, let me move on here. So the next thing you want to watch out for is, does your ISP have an agreement with the RIAA and MPAA? Several of the big ones do, actually. Like, we covered the story a couple of weeks back that like six of the big name ISPs have agreements now. They were doing that.
CenturyLink?
Huh?
I'm sorry. Comcast?
Comcast does.
CenturyLink?
I don't know about that one. It was big names like Comcast, Verizon,
CenturyLink,
AT&T.
CenturyLink is pretty fucking big now.
I'd have to go back in the show notes and find the link to the story. Yeah. It's on Torrent Freak. You can probably find it.
CenturyLink just bought Quest, or Quest, as they would like to be called.
I don't remember seeing either of those two in the story, but they had several of the big name providers: Time Warner, Verizon, AT&T.
Fuck them. I don't care.
Thing is, most of your smaller ISPs, like your local, your local municipalities, the people who provide ISPs that way, they don't have those agreements, so they may not care. But your smaller ISPs have less customers, so if they are doing any kind of filtering or watching what you're doing, it's actually easier because you know the haystack to find the needle, so to speak, is smaller. So I don't know if that
and
makes
filled with needles.
Well, but I mean that's true. But you know, if you're a big name ISP and you've got millions of customers versus a small ISP that's just got, you know, one city, it's actually easier for the small ISP to do the filtering and watch what you're doing, if they care to look. You know, that's the other thing. Does anybody at your smaller ISP actually know how to do that? So, and also the big point on this is private browsing does practically nothing for the kind of monitoring we're talking about. Private browsing means that your browser is not saving anything locally. It's not caching. It's not keeping history. It's not remembering what you download. But if your ISP is actually logging, that doesn't mean squat, because that's happening outside of the browser anyways, right?
Private browsing is so you don't want, in case you don't want your wife or girlfriend to see what porn you're looking at.
Pretty
that's
much.
What private browsing is for.
And that's,
see, and that's where people are doing it wrong.
See, the note I've got in here is it's great for keeping your family or roommates or anyone else who shares a computer from knowing what you're looking at. But as far as your ISP goes, they still know. So, and you know, you want to know what they're seeing, right? About a month ago, we covered on Digital Dojo how to watch what's actually coming out of your machine on a what's coming on the wire. We talked about different ways of tapping your network and different programs for using that. And, you know, that's a great way to see what your ISP can actually see. Tap your network and look. It's pretty simple, actually. The other thing to keep in mind is that your ISP is also running your DNS, so they can log and see what websites you're requesting the addressing to. So, and
unless
even if
you go in and tell it to use a different one.
But even if you tell it to use a different one, like you use a Google DNS or free DNS or open DNS, there's a couple of different ones out there. Most of those DNS requests are still sent in clear text, and so it's pretty easy to intercept and or log those. It's not.
But there again, we come back to the point of, is anyone actually looking?
That's a very important point, and that's why that was the first thing I covered, because right now most ISPs aren't. Several of them have agreements to start in June, but for copyright purposes. But again, even on those, as somebody who's seen a lot of DMCA complaints, I can tell you mostly they're looking for bad rap and big name movies.
If
you're not downloading, if you're downloading something that's, oh, well, and sometimes big name video games, but if you're not downloading, like if you're downloading music that's not popular, like not big name rap or country, and you're downloading movies that nobody gives a crap about, like independent movies or stuff that's a little bit old, you're probably not going to be caught. And I'll tell you the truth, anybody who's watching these complaints, when they get a complaint saying somebody was sharing Army of Darkness, I guarantee you they just delete it, because it's like, no, that movie's awesome, you're not getting in trouble for downloading that. So but let's see, where was I? DNS. Oh, right, proxies. Many ISPs run transparent proxies as well. They do this to save on bandwidth and improve performance, but they can do a lot of logging on those things if they chose to. Many of them actually don't, just for performance reasons, right? You know, they log content on for a day or two, and after that they let it refresh. It's more just so, you know, you're not requesting the Google logo every time somebody opens a browser from Google. You're getting it from their transparent proxy. It's just a bandwidth savings, right? But they are running them. So if they chose to log there, they could. I'm not saying they do. I'm just saying they could.
So does that mean that they would cache, you know, Jenna Jameson's boobs?
I'm sure that's in a cache somewhere. And, you know, absolutely. I'm sure the commonly... Well, let's be honest. I'm sure all the images in B, in 4chan, are cached in several ISPs proxies because people are pulling them up a lot, and that way they load faster. And let's be real, right? That's what people are looking at, is B on 4chan, right?
For the most part.
So I'm sure that stuff's cached. They just don't want to talk about it because people find that distasteful. So...
pussies.
Wow. Okay. Anyways, so the other point I have in here on this is, just because something is encrypted, it doesn't mean they can't figure out what you're doing. For example, BitTorrent traffic is damned obvious on the network, even though a lot of clients have encryption enabled by default. And it's generally pretty easy to see what a system was connecting to, even if you can't see what's being sent. At where I work, I do a lot of my network security work in a program called IP Audit. IP Audit doesn't actually track what packets you sent. It just tracks how many of them. So I can see what you connected to, on what port, and by how much data you sent. I can't see what you actually sent, but that's usually enough. You know, I've caught local proxies on our network with that thing. I've caught all kinds of stuff, and BitTorrent's damned obvious. I mean, it's like, gee, you think? I mean, it's like, oh, look, it's connecting to all these residential IPs on UDP and moving a couple of kilobytes at a time, you know, up to about a meg. Any network analyst who knows what they're doing can just point to a connection and say, yep, they're running BitTorrent. I mean, it's...
Yeah, but see, there's the big caveat. Any network, you know, any network guy that knows what he's doing.
I'd like to assume that most people who are running networks are better at it than I am, because I'm...
You're wrong.
I do security work, though. I don't actually manage the network. I do auditing of it. I'd like to think the network guys are better at actually running it than I am. Anyways.
I still think you're wrong, but...
I appreciate the compliment, but I don't know that it's true. Anyways... And I had one last point on this. If you're using a router, which most people are, most of the time your ISP can't actually tell what system behind the router, especially if it's encrypted, was actually making the connection. It all looks like it's coming from, you know, one connection. So, you know, as an example, if you're using an encrypted connection, the ISP can't tell if it was a laptop, iPad, or Xbox that was making some web connection. But if it's in clear text, they can usually pull some other data, like, say, a user agent string that'll probably give it away that, oh, this was done on an Xbox or an iPad. But if it's a protocol that doesn't have, like, a user agent string, or you're using a program that lies about its user agent string, for example, say, Opera. Opera lies about its user agent string. As far as a web server is concerned, Opera is Internet Explorer. They do that for compatibility reasons. But, Opera totally lies about its user agent. I'm sure tons especially like third-party browsers and other apps, do that kind of shit. Like, if you got apps on your iPad, I'm sure some of them are lying about what their user agent is just to get web pages to show up right.
So, basically then, have a cheap, dirt cheap USB drive and dirt cheap USB Wi-Fi and throw some virtual or bootable Linux on there. Do whatever you want to do. Drop it down and ditch everything. And, yeah, I didn't do that. Some rogue system.
Well, especially if you leave your Wi-Fi open, right?
Right.
See, and I didn't actually cover that in my show notes, but we can talk about it. I've got some ideas here for circumventing monitoring. The first one I listed out was SSH tunneling, because that was the first one that came to my mind, which is, you know, there's lots of free shell providers out there. Usually they say they're for entertainment purposes, or not entertainment, educational purposes, right? They'll give you a shell, usually like a meg or two of web space. And it's mostly just so you can get into a Unix shell and play around with them, right? And some of them are for IRC access, and some of them, you know, say it's, oh, so you can anonymously get on things because they believe in free speech and all this other stuff. But, you know, you can Google around and find plenty of free SSH shells out there if you want one. Also, many of your web hosting companies will give you shell access. If you buy, you know, you go buy web hosting, you'll get shell access to your account. Usually I've got, I can SSH into the web, the hosting we use for Galaxy 15. I can SSH in and get a command prompt on there, and I've actually bounced traffic through there before in situations where I felt it was necessary. Not detailing that, but I have done it before. So, and actually, cloud and other VM hosting providers, like Amazon EC2 is the one that comes to mind, because you can run pretty much anything you want. You could put an SSH host or even a VPN host up there if you wanted to bounce through Amazon for stuff. I'm assuming you're probably violating some usage agreement. At that point, it's a question of, do you get caught? SSH can be difficult to get going, especially if you've never played with it before. And most of your SSH proxying, like if you set up an SSH tunnel and then go into your web browser and say, use this SOX proxy and give it your local host and whatever port you set up, your DNS requests are still being sent in the clear. They might not be able to see your content, but they'll see what web pages you were going to, right?
Isn't the DNSSEC supposed to secure that?
DNSSEC is supposed to prevent DNS man-in-the-middle attacks. It's adding a layer of SSL and some cryptographic checking to DNS requests. The idea there is I can't set up a DNS server on my network and intercept your DNS requests and respond to them before the real one, the real DNS server.
Right.
There's other aspects to it, but generally that's what they're trying to prevent with DNSSEC is fake DNS servers causing problems.
So that wouldn't work at the ISP level, you don't think, then?
I suppose it could, but if the ISP is running your DNS server, what's it matter?
I guess that's true, yeah.
So, yeah. The next thing I had in the list here for circumventing some of this stuff is Tor, actually. You know, onion routing was actually designed to circumvent this kind of snooping. They bounce between your points on, you know, between multiple points in the internet, generally three, and they use, you know, layers of encryption. It's actually got different encryption between every bounce point in a onion routing situation. That's why they call it onion routing, because you've got layers of encryption that are unwrapped as you go, and it's very slow. So that's the only the great thing about Tor is it's, you know, truly anonymous, and I know that they have a hard time tracking people through it. They've actually busted one of the drug trafficking sites that was hosted only through Tor, but I think they got that through means outside of Tor. They didn't actually break Tor. They found some other way to track somebody. Somebody had messed up, essentially, and gave out some information they shouldn't have.
Well, you know, like, that's usually much, much easier for tracking that sort of thing. Because, you know, people have usernames, and, like, people like to reuse these types of names.
Sure.
And, you know, like it's really not that difficult. You can even just look at, like, times people log in and all kinds of other stuff. I believe there's even some software out there that they use to, like, do correlations between, like, Facebook logon times and like.
Oh yeah, that's what HB Gary was peddling to the government. That's where they're making their money. And not only that, but if they were selling drugs online, that means that at some point they were trying to convert digital transactions into cash. and most of that stuff is logged heavily. So yeah, they were operating in the States where a lot of logging goes on with that kind of stuff. So anyways, but also just as a final mention on Tor here, I've got an article from Read Write Web. Yes, I can speak. There's an iPad and iPhone application called the Covert Browser, which approved by Apple earlier this week. It uses Tor to encrypt internet traffic and route it through three different servers to ensure data about users cannot be intercepted by third parties. Such data would include browsing history and, more commonly, one's geographic location. It's essentially Tor for the iPhone and iPad, but it's just the browser, right? It's just anything you do in that app. It's not like you run this and then your web mail and all this other stuff is encrypted. But if you're desperate to get Tor on an iPad, this is an app for doing it. And I didn't pull it up in the iTunes store, but I think they've got the code for the damn thing posted, so I'm pretty sure it's free. So
that could be useful.
Well, I mean, just, you know, if you needed Tor on your iPhone, right?
And yeah,
you
didn't want
to jailbreak it or whatever. There's actually one in the Apple store for doing Tor now. And the final thing I had for, you know, using your real connection and subverting monitoring is VPNs. VPNs are very good at bouncing your traffic through somewhere else. They are almost never free. If you're setting up your own, they can be a pain in the ass, and the speed varies on whatever service you're using, all right? I've had VPNs that were great. I mean, you know, it's just as fast as your real connection. You'd never know any different. And I had others that slowed you down worse than Tor did. But at this point, the VPN effectively is your ISP, right? They can see everything you're doing as well as your ISP could before you're using the VPN. And most VPN services, especially within the States, they're going to comply with something. If the government shows up with a warrant and says, hi, we think we've got somebody looking at, you know, highly, highly illegal stuff, or, you know, it's like somebody's a terrorist, they're going to comply with that wiretap or warrant service, right?
Right.
So. Yeah.
You know, just something to keep in mind. If you really want to bounce through a VPN, I've actually got some links in the show notes that I don't think I mentioned the SSH one. I've got a link to a pretty good tutorial, actually from Engadget, on doing an SSH tunnel if you want to know how to set one up, because it's actually not that difficult. If you've got a Linux box out there on a public IP somewhere, you can set up an SSH tunnel fairly easily. As far as VPNs go, I've linked this article before, but it fits what we're talking about in Digital Dojo, so I went ahead and linked it again. It's a Torrent Freak article where they actually go through and rank a bunch of VPN providers. I think this article is fairly old. It's from 2009, so you might want to double-check any of these. But they actually rank a bunch of VPN providers based on how much they log, how well they do with your privacy, that kind of stuff.
That's cool. So that wouldn't be my first choice, so.
Well, no, they're not free. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, Tor is pretty much the best solution if you want to be sure that you can't be traced back to and make sure everything's going through Tor. That's where things like the Tails Live C are handy. And of course, we're referring to making sure you don't get tracked, right? Please don't do anything horribly illegal and say Pure Decking told you how to do it, because we're talking about this kind of stuff is just so you know what's out there, right?
Exactly.
So, and now that I've said that, let's move on to, you know, use a connection that can't be traced back to you. Like, say, open Wi-Fi. For example, your neighbors.
Brilliant.
If you see your neighbors haven't bothered to secure your Wi-Fi and you want to really be sure you're not going to get in trouble for what you're doing, that's certainly one way to go. Why isn't my soundboard working? Crap.
Yeah, that's a way to go.
And really, like, that's probably the way to go. Like, yeah, you can go through 7 proxies and everything like that, but in the end, it's still going right back to your box. And that's not necessarily ideal if you're...
You know, my fail sound is like the Chinese government
to know the stuff that you're doing.
All right, let me make sure this is working. Hang on a second. That's what I was going for. That, like, wasn't working. I was pounding the button and it wasn't working. It's weird.
And absolutely nothing came through on our side.
Yeah. We haven't been able to hear anything this whole time, dude.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you didn't hear the intro music or anything? Shit.
No.
Oh, I see what's wrong. I wish I'd known that. I've got that channel turned down. Let me...
Hey, oh, look, there we go.
Okay, it's going out on the stream. It's on the recording. I've had that channel turned down this entire time from where I was messing around with the dolls and being on Skype calls earlier.
I was so about to talk through the intro music, and then I'm like, wait, I think there's intro music going. Maybe they changed something while I was gone.
I'm sorry about that, guys. I didn't.
No biggie.
I wish somebody had told me. I would have fixed that a long time ago.
We just figured go on with the show.
Anyways. So, but moving on, there's actually totally legitimate open Wi-Fi that doesn't track restaurants, bars, bookstores, some other stores, like I think Staples. I remember specifically Staples having an open Wi-Fi you could hop on. I think speed's going to be varied. Some of these are going to be filtered. And, you know, if you go into the coffee shop and you use a credit card, you've just made a record that you were there. In fact,
that's why you use a credit card from Google, and then you send it to the house that's been foreclosed on that nobody lives in, and just watch for it to show up.
I was just going to suggest you pay for your $4 coffee with a $5 bill.
Because if you do that, you're a terrorist.
Oh, right. I forgot. Using cash to pay for anything makes you a terrorist these days. I forgot.
But, everybody these days has like all these applications on their phone that remember their login. You know, their phone automatically syncs when it goes on Wi-Fi and all this other sort of crap. You really got to be careful about that sort of stuff when you're using these public Wi-Fi access points.
That's why if you're going to use one of those things, you really want to use a live CD or something else that's got nothing on it.
Or
have a laptop that is clean. That way, you know, you've got one you travel with and doesn't have anything that can identify you on, and, you know, to automatically sign into Skype or any of your messaging services or remember your email or anything. Preferably, you want to set that thing up so it's, if you've got a decoy laptop that you take with you to hop on Wi-Fi, what you actually want is you want to run off like a live thumb drive that's got all your real stuff on it. And on the hard drive, you want to have like the Windows install that came with the laptop. Some malware installs, a couple of bookmarks of things that, you know, really make you look like an innocent sort of person. I'll let you decide for your own on what kind of bookmarks those would be. Maybe to a different political party than you're normally affiliated with. you really want the whole, when they boot this laptop up, they go, Oh, that way, you know, you can really make a claim for ignorance. Whereas the flash drive that actually has everything real on it, if you were really being detained by somebody for doing something on the Wi-Fi, you'd swallowed that or threw it in a trash can or microwave or something. But, all right. Anyways, moving on. Schools and universities are another place where you can get on open Wi-Fi. A lot of them are going to require a login. So you want to look and see if they've got like a guest or a visitor network, because many do. A lot of schools, especially universities, are constantly trying to recruit. So a lot of times you'll see a guest or visitor Wi-Fi network where you can get on. It's meant for alumni. It's meant for people that are trying to recruit, that kind of thing. And if it's a school you attend, that means your ISP is the school, which means now all your browsing is subject to school policies as well as, you know, laws. So, and a lot of these are filtered. So, again, just something to watch out for. And, that's flagging that as a misspelling. So let's fix that in the show notes. Small businesses. A surprising number of small businesses have no idea how to secure their Wi-Fi. So if you're wanting something to connect something to bounce your connection through, that's sometimes a choice. I've actually seen Ethernet ports in parking lots. Has anybody else ever seen that shit?
No, but you need to show me where these are.
Yeah.
Because that could be extremely interesting.
Hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Been there, done that, and I can tell you why, too.
They've got these vans that are usually, they've got a piece of equipment in them that's very expensive and travels between hospitals. So exactly. Like a big-ass RV. So they've got usually a Home Depot plastic lock box that where somebody's already cut the lock for you. in the parking lot, and there's a post with power and Ethernet right there, so you can just park your car next to one of these things, run a few cables out the window, and get on a hospital network.
Well, typically you'll find there's other ACLs on that port that will allow you to only do certain things.
I would hope so.
Yeah, and they'll be in very public areas, so if someone sees a car parked there and some wires come out of it, it's going to be pretty obvious.
Again, you have to assume, is anybody looking? And also, too, we're not talking about hacking a hospital network. We're talking about just getting access to the internet without being tracked, right?
Right.
Again, this is why you go ahead and pull off the panel. You run yourself your own wireless Ethernet jack off of this, so that way, you know, then you have Wi-Fi. There is no wires. Put everything back nice and pretty.
That, maybe.
I'm liking this idea.
And finally, as a place to grab Ethernet ports, kiosks. Most kiosks, like photo kiosks and, you know, internet terminals, they're regular PCs, like, you know, store-bought Dell PC. They're where they've got a little shelf in a fancy box, right? A lot of stores, like where you apply for a job, they're a PC in a box, right? And they're running some kiosk software. And generally, you can hack them, but there's a much easier solution. Look on the back of the kiosk, and you're going to find the Ethernet port it's plugged into. And you can a lot of times, you can just unplug that and plug your laptop into it, and now you're online, right?
This works with... but in my experience, though, typically those kiosks have like a 2 kilobyte freaking down and up connection to the internet. They're slower and shit.
If you're sending email, who cares, right?
I guess that's
so.
True,
so yeah. It depends on what you're trying to do, right? This is just, you know, just trickery to get, you know, anonymous access to the internet. And you know, this works with vending machines. A lot of vending machines, especially ones that have credit card readers, you'll see an Ethernet port on the back of those. So if you can reach back there and find the Ethernet port, generally you're going to need your own Ethernet cable, as the Ethernet cable from the kiosk is going to run onto the back of the machine where you can't unhook it from the machine. You know, you got to unhook it from the wall. And you'd be amazed at the number of ATMs I see that don't have any kind of lockbox over the Ethernet port. You could just walk up, unplug them, and plug in your own thing. I wouldn't recommend messing with an ATM's Ethernet port, though. That sounds like a great way to get arrested. So
do it!
Well, it's a new way, instead of putting the card reader on, man in the middle box.
Oh, yeah. No, if you want to have some fun, Google up ATM skimmers, which, yeah, there's some great pictures of there if you want to make yourself paranoid for the rest of your life ever using an ATM card.
Yeah, I've actually taken to, like, trying to forcibly remove the little bit that you put your card into every ATM that I use now.
I've had a police officer ask me why I was tugging on the front of an ATM before I used it. He saw me pulling on the thing hard, walked over. What are you doing? I'm like, I'm making sure there's not a skimmer on here before I use my card. He goes, "What's a skimmer?" And I explained it to him.
Now he's afraid too.
Huh? Yeah, now he's afraid too. Yeah, no, it was not fun. But I have had to do that. So the final idea. Go ahead, Anil.
I was going to say real quick on the other thing I was thinking of, places. We were talking about hospitals on you know, those Ethernet ports, but hospitals in general, a lot of them now have guest, you know, for patient Wi-Fi.
Oh, yeah.
And now, so
there's guest Wi-Fi all over the place. You just have to look for it. Especially if you've got a smartphone, just pull it out every once in a while and look at what kind of Wi-Fi networks are around you. I'm sure you're going to find one that says guest. So just be careful using these Wi-Fi networks and logging into an account you care about, because Wi-Fi is essentially open, right? Especially if it's an open Wi-Fi, somebody else could be logging everything you type. Just keep that in mind. So make sure you have throwaway accounts, or make sure you've got one-time passwords, or whatever other, you know, kind of security measures you want to take. The final idea I had for getting anonymous internet access that wasn't easily traced back to you was burner cell phones. Apparently, from what I understand, not having done this myself, these are fairly easy to get in a fake name.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, I haven't personally done it, but I have knowledge of people who have, and it's like nothing to do it. So... And
not only that, you can get smartphones now that are burners.
Well, not only that, I was going to say you could pull the SIM cards out and stick them in whatever you want, be it a tablet or a USB cell phone or
exactly. Modem. The last burner cell phone I got, the SIM card was soldered in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, you it probably still had a jack on it, so you could hook a USB or something into it and get them.
Yeah, yeah, it was a USB charged burner smartphone, but and still had 3G, which was really awesome.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, but granted, 3G used like $1 a minute, so that hurt.
Ow. Well, you know, if you just need something quick and, you know, you want to put on there LaMangelo or something as far as a fake name. And, yeah, you know, LaMangelo or Bob Hackerman or whatever you want to put down as a fake name.
The absolute funnest thing to do. Now, granted, this takes a little bit of research first. Find out who your local FBI agents are. Get phones in their name.
Toasty. There you go. I like that. That's awesome. So I didn't put it in the show notes, but I had a few ideas also. If you didn't want to go for all the encryption, but you wanted some plausible deniability as far as your home Wi-Fi connection goes or your home network connection goes, the first one would be don't put any kind of encryption on your Wi-Fi. Leave it open at home. Not the greatest idea if you, say, buy anything online. But if you want to be able, later be able to claim, oh, no, that wasn't me running BitTorrent. I don't have a password on my Wi-Fi. That could have been my neighbors. That could have been somebody in their car. That could have been whatever. You know, leaving an open Wi-Fi is kind of a way out. I don't know how well that works in civil cases, but I know in a criminal case, it makes it really hard to prove it was you. I know in yes. civil cases, there's a lot of I'm not a lawyer, so I'm kind of going with what I've read on this. But I know in civil cases, you know, they can sometimes still claim that you were responsible because it was your Wi-Fi connection. But I know in criminal, that makes it harder to prove stuff. The other idea I had was run a Tor exit node on your network at home. That generates a lot of traffic that's odd. So, you know, it makes it harder to filter out what's real and what's not on your network. Again, this comes back to, are you responsible for everything coming out of that Tor exit node now or not? You know, this is where running Tor exit nodes on other people's networks gets to be funny. And the final thought I had was, again, you know, the decoy laptop we were talking about earlier for open Wi-Fi, where you've got the version of Windows that came on it with all the spyware and adware and everything that comes loaded on these machines these days, all the ad programs and the ISP offers and everything else that comes when you buy a new computer. You know, load that down with some malware and load it down with a few other things. So that way, if they ever say, hey, we think you were doing something on your network, you can hand them this laptop and say, I don't know what's going on. Can your guys' tech people look at this? And they say, oh, yeah, it's all malwared up. So obviously it wasn't you. So just some ideas I had. I don't know. Does anybody got anything else to add for that before we close it out?
No.
All right. So actually I had most of the crowd on I wanted tonight as opposed to for the Digital Dojo, because if anybody was going to add stuff to it, it was going to be you guys. But anyways, promo time. Listen to the stream. We're constantly updating it. Sard's always looking for new music, preferably good music, but, you know, free music. I Have Nothing every Saturday, as we discussed earlier. It is actually back. We've been off hiatus for a while now. So, IHF?
Yeah, thanks for fucking letting me know.
Damn it, now he knows. Pure Decking every Thursday, Between the Sheets, whenever Syntax decides he's bringing it back. NR7, whenever somebody hits BSV with a cattle prod, hit the Galaxy 15 Radio site and the Twitter handles, galaxy15radio.com and @G15Radio. And the Twitter handle is really cool because we've got the site set up to just kind of automagically post on Twitter whenever we update the site. So when new shows are added, when new posts are made, if you follow the Twitter handle, you can see whenever we update stuff just automatically without having to deal with RSS feeds or anything else like that. Because Sard let me know a long time ago, and I never really did look at it, that if you hit the RSS feed off the G15 site, it doesn't get a title.
No.
We've never actually fixed that. And it has to do with the theme we're using, where if you put a title in it, it puts text over the logo.
Huh.
And having never bothered to fix that, because I don't know of anybody actually using the RSS feeds for anything but podcasting. And with those, you want to get the category feeds, not the whole thing. So, I don't know. Is that a big deal to anybody that it doesn't have the title?
No, not really, dude. Like I said, I'm probably the only one that uses RSS.
So, all right. Well, that's pretty much all we got. I'm getting ready to hit play on the closing music here. And wow, we did an hour and a half show tonight as opposed to the usual hour. So enjoy the long format.